what's probably a business that's worth $1 to $1.5 million today as we sit here talking that has the potential to be worth million in 2028. That's got to be kind of exciting, right?
But we're getting closer.
It's going to be difficult. You're going to have to not only get bigger, but get better and get your margins better at the same time. So you'll have a tough road ahead of you, but could I tempt you in 2028? Because we're still going to be friends, hopefully, if you're executing at that level. And I say, Nolan, giddy up, let's go.
Some days we keep on rolling. Some days we are folding.
I'm also a business valuation expert, so this is a show that first you think is about numbers and business, but when you zoom out, it's really about life. But what is it worth, and what's the right timing on that?
Be sure to like and subscribe, and let us know what you think in the comments.
All right, hello. Welcome back to Inspired or Acquired. This is the podcast where we have real conversations with small business owners, give them a valuation, and ask whether they would sell their business or hold on. So today we're joined by Nolan Gore out of Austin, Texas. He is a great follow on Twitter and owns a landscaping company. Welcome to the show, Nolan.
Guys, I'm really excited. It's fun to see you here. I've obviously met you, Clint, in person. Patrick, it's fun to talk to you and a little bit nervous. You know, this is a fun one. It's kind of an interesting process to go through.
Well, we're excited to have you, and we know you're always pretty open and real online. So I think it'll be a great conversation today. So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about your business. What do you do? Who are your clients? How many team members do you have?
Yeah, so we are a residential lawn and landscaping business in Austin, Texas. The company was started in 2005. I joined in 2016. When I joined, we were doing about $1.6 million in top line revenue. Now in 2023, so last year we did just under $6 million in revenue. Wow. But we did an acquisition at the end of 23 that should put us in the $8 million range this year in 2024. And it has been a heck of a ride. I am fully in the business. This is my day job. I operate. I have an active partner in the business who helps me operate and complements my skills very well. So I have specific roles in the business if you want to talk that, but that's kind of the skinny.
Awesome. Well, Nolan, this is Clint. I'm going to just jump right into the valuation part of this. This is the fun part for me as a professional deal maker or broker. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. I have a family business that does nursery and landscaping, and I know how hard this business is. I know how hard you work. I really respect what you do and the way you lead your team. And so it's definitely an honor to be having this conversation. So I want to jump into just playing 20 questions with you real quick, get you kind of what I think a ballpark value of your company today might be. And then we'll dive into some other questions to kind of determine where you might be within 5 years of the way you're going. But first off, so you did $6 million. I looked at a little bit your financials, just a little bit. You had kind of a funky year last year because you were working on this other acquisition. It's your first acquisition, right?
First serious acquisition. And then I also add, and this is the classic story with every operator, we had some weird external circumstances, which made it harder with the historic heat and drought. I don't know, man. Yeah. It was a weird, hard year, really challenging year for me personally as well from a family perspective. But go ahead with your 20 questions. I'd love to answer them.
Yeah. So just, you know, me leveling with you, if you came to me right now and were like, Clint, I want to sell, I would probably tell you not to. I'd probably say you need to at least wait until you put 2024 on the books, because 2023 was a bit of a strange year. And I don't think you're really showing, you know, your true earnings power in a provable way, because you were a little bit distracted and doing a new thing. And so, yeah, I saw your discretionary earnings probably under 5% last year, like ballpark. I didn't go through with a fine tooth comb and find every ad back, but it's like, you know, maybe just out of 6 million of revenue, you might've had, 100K salary for yourself and like maybe another 100, 200, 300 at the most of profit. So under 5%, I would say a healthy landscaping company is typically doing like 10 to 20%. So I think you've got room to improve on your margins here. And buyers mostly care about the bottom line. You know, like they care about the bottom line way more than the top line. The top line can sometimes just be, that means you got a lot of people and a lot of headaches if you got a big top line, but 100%. The bottom line is what lets you win. So if I was just your friend here saying like, hey, let me put this business on the market, I'd say, hey, let's put in a better bottom line number in 2024 and let's more heavily weight that on that 8 million revenue. See if we can get you closer to 10%, you know, or even better. And then I think you're going to be in a much better position. But I would say just based off of if I had to go today with where you're at, like, sadly, I think you're roughly in the $1 million-ish range, like 1 to 1.5. But I think that if you put up a good year in 2024, you could cross potentially 2 million, you know, and be like maybe 2 to 2.5 in valuation. So it's all going to be up to you. You're the one that's got to execute and drive profits to the bottom line. But just for this conversation, I'd say like, let's say 1.5 million is what I think you could, if you went to market now and tried to sell before the end of the year, is ballpark what I think you could get now. Next question is like, what kind of debt do you have? Did you take on acquisition debt with this first one?
So let me respond to the numbers there a bit and just say, honestly, doesn't surprise me. It's not something I'm proud of, how we completely executed at the end of the year. I love the team and I'm proud of where we're at right now, but I know we have to do better if we were going to try to put ourselves into this position. And I'm not surprised by a friend like you being like, hey man, you really got to get your stuff together and execute really well for a year before you go and look at this kind of thing. So that's not surprising. From a debt perspective, we did take on just a little bit of debt primarily to take over the assets in this acquisition. We did the most of it with cash we had on hand. We've been saving up for a long time to be able to put it together, and actually thought we were going to buy a piece of real estate to expand our service area. And then this opportunity came along. And then interestingly, the vehicles that we purchased were in such bad shape that we did get a bunch of money back from the deal, but we're having to sell the vehicles at much below their value in the bank. And so we're actually paying back almost all of that debt right now. I think that we'll only end up with about 50K in debt at the end of selling all these vehicles. And then elsewhere in the business, the only other debt is on vehicles. And it's a couple hundred thousand at this point.
Gotcha. And do you own the majority of this company? But you said you had some partners, right?
Yeah, so I'm over 60%. I have one operating partner in the business with me. And then my brother and a friend own the remainder of it.
Great. And just if you don't mind, like, you haven't been in this business a real long time. Like, what did you come in with, like, startup capital wise, like when you first started?
The story is both. It's primarily just embarrassing. I didn't know what ETA was as a term until like 16 months ago. I like had to Google it. I was trying to figure out because ETA doesn't come up on Google very easily.
You didn't have some slick name like Harborview Capital and some slick website with an Ivy League.
Some guy came to my dad who's also in the industry.
They let you in.
And honestly, to this day, I don't even know what we paid. And the reason for that is it was primarily hey, if you take over the debt, you can have it. And there were several hundred thousand dollars in debt. And so I put in 60, but it was all just the cash to give us additional runway because it was struggling at the time. And several others put in. So I think we put in a total of, I think we put in 120, something like that, at the time, and took over several hundred thousand in debt And so I literally was asking my operating partner the other day, like, hey, do you know what we started with? No idea, man. Like, well, that's embarrassing because we should be better than that, but we weren't. And so here we are.
What year was that?
That was the end of 2016, January 1st, 2017.
Okay. So I don't want you to be too hard on yourself here, because I want to put a little perspective on this. It's like, you came in with very small dollars into this space. You didn't do a big amount of borrowing. You took over some existing debt. And now you're at a place where I think you've got a seven-figure valued business where you're making a living that supports you and your family out of it. And even paying off your third-party debt and splitting the proceeds with a partner, like, you'd probably walk away with 600K or so, I would guess, after all the costs and third-party debt retirement. And, I mean, before you started, could you have had 600K in the bank account? Like, in your personal,
not unless I got lucky with the cryptos that I chose at the time, you know?
Yeah. So I love your story, because it's like, it just shows, like, there's not a lot of people just starting out in life and as an entrepreneur that could say, like, yeah, I could just come up with 600 grand in liquid cash. But, like, you could turn what you've built in your blood, sweat, and effort into that type of windfall if you chose to right now. And so it sounds like, timing wise, probably not ideal, but you're still, like, you know, you've got something here, you know, you've got something moving. And so I want you to, you know, somewhat take some perspective in that, like, you're building something valuable here. It's already valuable. It's going to get more valuable. And in fact, I want to walk through this, not just where you're at this moment, but maybe, like, where you could be in 5 years. And Patrick, if you don't mind pulling up the model here, we could maybe talk this through a little.
Yeah. And let me address the kind of where, like, I'm not pleased with that number. Mm-hmm. But I am also proud of getting here. I understand. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the landscaping magazine today. That only 17% of the landscaping companies are above where we're at right now. Like, we're in the top quartile plus of size in the country. That's super cool. Nice. And I'm really proud of us. I'm 34. Someday I might actually get good at this. I look forward to that day. I have so much to learn, and a lot of what I do on Twitter and what I do on here, and the reason I was comfortable coming on here is, like, guys, I'm okay. I'm not good. I'm not great. I've seen great, and I look forward to being that someday. And I'm just trying, and no, you don't have to be great to get into this game. It's scary if you aren't. I'm scared some days. Like, this week I was scared, but I'm just going to go, and I'm going to believe that I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to keep trying. So, okay, I'd love to see the model.
I love that, man. Always getting better. So just a couple quick questions. What's an average customer spend with you guys? Like, an average job for your residential services? Is it 1,000 or is it 3,000 in a year? What's kind of average ticket?
I would say, the reason that we have some that spend 100,000 and some that spend 1,000, right? And okay. So that's the average and median are going to be totally different things. And so I would say probably in the, let's see, 65. So this is the kind of question I should 100% know really fast. Let's say 3,000. That's a 3,000, okay. Median.
Okay. And your profit margin on that, like your gross profit per customer, is it, you know,
this is without overhead, probably the 50 range.
50. Okay. Sounds good. So you guys did 6 million last year. You're running at 50% cost of goods or 50% profit as well. Looking into the future, you're on pace for 8 this year in 2024, right? After that, what do you think the growth rate is that you could sustain annually? Is it 10% per year or 15% per year? Or if all the cool kids stop moving to Austin, you know, maybe you'll flatten out. But what's kind of the ballpark top line growth over the next few years?
First of all, the cool kids that are moving to Austin are typically hippies from California that don't like this stuff. And they think you can spray vinegar on their weeds and it will kill them. But I tell the team that my goal and what we have replicated is 18% a year. Now that might not happen every single year, but with acquisitions and with big years, I think that we'll average out in the 18 range.
Nice. Okay. So if we extrapolate that out, 18% on the top line, if you can see this visual in 2028, would put you at 15 million. And then your, you know, bottom line, if you kind of stayed in the same profit margin, would be, you know, ideally this is what we're going to talk about, how to improve this. But if your bottom line percentage stayed the same and be, you know, 800K, which would be very lean, but let's talk about how to improve that. So top line growth of 18% per year. Do you think your cost of goods would stay steady at 50%, or do you think there's room for improvement to improve that margin?
I'm naturally pretty conservative in these kinds of things. And so I want to tell you that, yeah, 50% sounds good, but really if we're executing at a very high level, we should be at 55% at least.
Okay. 55% profit. So
if Mike maybe 45% listens to this, he's going to call me and just talk so much trash about how I need to be better. And it's going to be terrible. And I look forward to it, Mike, please.
I can picture that conversation. So, all right. So we're going to say, you get another 5% improvement on your cost of goods. And so maybe we end up, you know, 4 or 5 years out closer to this 15, 20% margin that Clint's talking about. So if you had, you know, 15% falling to the bottom line 5 years from now, you know, your true EBITDA might be closer to, you know, 2.3, maybe 2.5 million. So Clint, I don't know what you think the multiple might be on a landscaping company that's got 2.3 million of EBITDA.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I'd rather model it a little more conservatively on the EBITDA, like let's put him at 10%, you know? So like if he grows at 18% from 8 million this year, gets to 15 million, let's model 15, you know, or 1.5 million of EBITDA. And I think I would run that through maybe a 5x multiple.
Okay.
And now we see a path, Nolan, of what's probably a business that's worth, you know, 1 to 1.5 million today as we sit here talking, that has a potential to be worth 7 to 8 million in 2028 or, you know, or in within 5 years. And so that's got to be kind of exciting, right? Like, it, you know, that's
closer.
Yeah. It's not that it's going to happen automatically. You know, it's going to be a lot of work and it's going to be difficult. You're going to have to not only get bigger, but get better, you know, and get your margins better at the same time. So you'll have a tough, you know, road ahead of you, but could I tempt you in 2028? 'Cause we're still going to be friends, hopefully, if you're executing at that level. And I say, Nolan, 7-8 mil, giddy up, let's go. Let's get you, you know, your 4 or 5 million for your share of this business. Let's take some chips off the table, find something you don't have to be so sweaty at in the Austin heat. Could I tempt you at that point? Or like, where does your mind go when you imagine that growth path and that path to an increased valuation here?
Obviously, that's outrageous money. Right. It's like, it's humbling money. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing where you look at history or even today, and there's just so few opportunities at the 1.5 number, let alone the 7.5, 8 number. And so that's where my first thought is just like, that's a hell of a lot of responsibility of, what God willing, that's a hell of a lot of responsibility to have that kind of wealth entrusted to my family. So that's my first thought. Secondarily, like, would I be tempted? I have no idea what I'm going to be feeling at that point and how tired I'm going to be. But what I'll tell you today, even though I am tired and I have had a really hard year, is that my vision is nowhere near done at 5 years. Mm. And there's a couple of things there. One, I don't know what the heck I do, right? Like, I don't know if I could. I mean, it showed a EBITDA number of 1.5 there. That's great money to me every year, like outrageous money to me every year already, more than I need by far. And I plan on giving a lot of that away at that point. And I already love my team, and I know I'm going to love them even more at that point. I'm sure some of them will really piss me off, because that's how it works every day anyway, including my business partner, who's a dear friend now. But I'm a builder. I want to be a builder. And in 5 years, I'll be 39. And I don't know where I'd go unless I was to build another thing, which might be the case. So the only reason I think at that point I would say yes is if I'm more burned out than I expect to be, and or I've realized that I am not actually a very good operator at that size, and that I'm better suited for this size, and I should go back to this size because that's where I fit better in the world, both for adding value and for serving humans. And so that's my first instinct when I hear that number. And I also just want to say again, that's just crazy. I hope we get there, because that would be a really good indication of a lot of people executing really well, and me getting to see it all happen.
Yeah, I think you're on your way, man. So I think you've already crossed the seven-figure threshold. I think in a perfect world, really good execution, maybe do another acquisition in the next 5 years and get your margins cranking and hire some good leadership under you. Like, you could build a business that could even be worth 10, it's not out of the question, but I think you're going to fall somewhere on that ramp. If you say like 10's like a blow it out of the water, like home run execution over the next 5 years. And that 7.5 we're talking is maybe like a good, great, level of execution, but maybe no acquisitions, just really good organic growth and getting the margins right. But I think it's very likely you're going to fall somewhere in that spectrum, between, 3 to 10 in the next 5 years in business value. And so,
let's talk about how to do that.
Yeah.
What do we think needs to happen to keep growing the top line and improve your profitability?
Yeah, no. I was just out in my office 35 minutes ago at this point. We were talking about gross margin improvement. Yep. And we are still in the we're talking about the next three months. It's all about execution on this acquisition. That is 2024. It's like execute this acquisition. That's how we win this year. They're part of the allure and the difficulty with the acquisition is they had poor gross margin numbers. And I knew that it was a very similar playbook to what I ran when I first came in to improve those numbers and to add services to it. And so we're looking at, it's just eating us up right now. And so we're going through each account line by line and looking at what they're doing and how we need to, we call it disentangle. They were doing a lot of things for one price, and we're separating all that out and improving each thing. And so there's hundreds of clients that we have to do with that. And that's step one. We get that cleaned up this year. It's still going to look bad at the end of the year for our first Q1 and part of Q2, but I expect by Q3 and four, we're going to start seeing the increase on the gross margins and bottom line.
So unbundling services would improve it or allow you to dig in on where you should make money, or allow you to charge more?
So the previous company was saying, hey, we will charge you $60. And we will mow your lawn, pick up your leaves, pull your weeds, and wash your dog. That one's a joke.
Sign me up.
and we would charge them $65 to mow their lawn.
Got it.
And so I'm going through the process right now and saying, hey, Bob, I'm so sorry. There's some confusion here. We're realigning the services. We want to serve you better in this way because we think that they were incentivized to cut corners because that's the only way they could make money. And we want to make sure you're getting the value that you're paying for. And so instead of telling you we're going to do all these things and then kind of doing it all half-assed, we're going to do this thing really well and it's going to cost this. And if you want this thing, we'll do it really well and it'll cost this. And so we're going through that portion each. So basically, to answer your question, we're getting paid for all the work we're doing now, as opposed to before they weren't.
Yeah. And how about on the new client front, who is doing sales and scoping out clients to make sure that you're getting your ideal margin?
Yeah. So this is something I'm excited about. We started, one of the things we're excited about and tired from is we started doing EOS third quarter of last year. And so we have much better insight into all this stuff than we ever have. It was before I was just like, man, just kind of this number stink. I have no idea why. We have so much better insight. The analogy that my EOS implementer told me was like, I'm going to turn on the lights. You're going to see all the cockroaches and you're going to feel like you want to quit, like make it go away. And that is 100% what happened. Mm-hmm. You turn on the lights. We turn on the lights with all the systems. We're like, oh my gosh, we suck. And so we are definitely improving in that area. We got somebody actually overseas that all they do is follow-ups. And I mean, the guy sold 13 things yesterday. He just makes 100 phone calls a day. And 13 is his record. That's why I'm bringing it up. He doesn't do 13 every day. But
that's amazing. He's just calling back on leads that you haven't heard a decision.
If someone says, hey, I want this thing, we send them something. He goes through like a 20-day process of like you send the quote and you call them immediately. On day two, you call them and text them. On day three, you send them this email and you text them. And on day four, you just call them and it just rolls. And all you have to do is say, I'm not interested anymore. If you aren't, but you get it. The story I say is like, I wanted flooring for our new house and it literally took an email, 3 phone calls and 2 text messages for me to buy it. And I wanted it on the first thing. I just didn't get around to it. And so it's like, you're actually helping them by following up on this stuff. And so he does that. That's been a huge, I don't know if I want to say unlock, but I can just tell the system is rolling there.
I mean, if you can increase your closing ratio on your current, you know, lead flow, that's a big lever. What was the next one you're going to say?
The second thing is we're just doing a much better job of understanding our actual enhancement sales, our landscaping sales, which are generally higher margin, and working through how many of these things should we be sending? What are the margins they really should be on this? Are we pricing them right? Are we executing them to what we say we're going to execute them? These are basic blocking and tackling things. But from a sales perspective, we've always just been like, hey, guys, go get it. And we're starting to move culturally. And this is hard. Shifting culture is really hard. We're trying to move culturally towards a response and hunting as opposed to just response. So instead of just taking whatever somebody asks us for, which in the spring is all you can do because everyone wants something. But by the time you get to summer and then fall is fine again, and then winter, you have to be out there looking for the opportunities. And so we're shifting our mindset really from a sales perspective in that direction. And it's hard. I mean, I'm having people struggle with that. I'm struggling with that. It's just different than we've done it for the last several years. It seems so obvious now I'm saying it, but it's just true.
And is anyone incentivized to either like, you know, upsell or knock on a neighbor's door with a flyer, or is anyone incentivized around efficiency? You know, like, is there any production pay going on for, you know, crews completing jobs within a lot of time?
For a pay for performance, no. Do I want it deeply? And do we talk about it every week because we're trying to figure it out? Yes. We've looked at a bunch of different systems. We've tried a handful of things. We were just talking about one on Tuesday of this week as well. And then yesterday as well. And so the answer to your question is no, but I have aspirations and I think it's extraordinarily important because right now I can totally see a misalignment between me and my team and I need to figure out how to align us so that they win when I win. Otherwise it's just me pushing them around. And I think that will be probably one of the top 3 things I could do on this path for the next 5 years.
Yeah. You want to be careful not to roll it out too early until you can track it. But then if you can say to somebody like, look, other landscaping crews in Austin are going to pay you, you know, I'm just going to make up a number, 25 an hour, but with us, you can make 33 an hour if you're efficient and you get good Google reviews and, you know, you just happen to ask them if they've ever thought of, you know, landscape design. And then that way you're able to pay them more based on their effectiveness versus like, you know, paying everybody a flat rate and just trying to drive them hard, you know?
Absolutely.
Nolan, I wanted to jump in with, you know, just a few tactical questions just because I know this space and I love this industry. Could you tell me your breakdown of revenue between installs and maintenance?
So about 50% of our revenue is maintenance. 30% is enhancements. About 8% is subcontracted fertilization, Which someday I will bring in-house, or I'll start a new company around that, because I've got about 600 clients there. And the sales, that, talk about a market that has great multiples. That's one of them. Our FERT company just sold, by the way, and did very well for themselves. And then we have several percentage points on holiday lights, and then there's about 8% on irrigation. Now, irrigation should go to about 10 or 12% if we're doing it right. We just got a fantastic manager in the door last November, and that's been thrilling to have him. I mean, it just feels like the guy before was so well-meaning. He just wasn't equipped, and this guy is really well situated, and so we're already dramatically improving there. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, and are you all residential, or do you do a little commercial?
With the acquisition, we did a little bit of commercial. It hasn't gone well because our systems aren't well set up for it. So we're moving back almost exclusively to residential. Can I pause here and give you a little bit more context on my mindset as well? Because I think it's important in this moment. So my dad is in the industry, and he's in commercial. And so I grew up around the industry, and I've seen him build multiple very large businesses in the space. So part of the reason I'm sitting here going, not, doesn't sound interesting to me, is I've seen it and I know what's possible. And I've like been the kid running around the office, and I know all the people running those businesses. And I'm thinking, those guys are really, really good. Like, my dad's one of the best there's ever been from the industry. Like, and that's, we can have a conversation about my own identity issues and daddy issues. I have a great relationship with my dad, but like realizing that I'm probably not going to match him in my own game is a thing. But I'm okay with it, and I'm grateful that I have that. And so part of the reason is like, I'm not interested in stopping at 15 million top line, because I've seen my dad go to 100 plus. Like, this isn't even close. We can do way better. I've seen it. And I know what it takes, and I know the kind of people that do it, and we've got great people. So all that to say, I think I took that way off track. Forgive me.
Oh, you're good. You know, I just think you've got kind of, when it comes to business valuation and just maximizing a landscaping company, there's the quantitative aspects, which is grow top line, grow bottom line. Then there's the qualitative aspects, which is really drives the multiple that someone would pay for your business, you know, and the qualitative aspects that acquirers really like to see is that you've got kind of like a system for everything, that you've got recurring revenue, that you've got very sticky, loyal customers. You basically have your job, Nolan, over the next 5 years, is, especially as you implement EOS fully, just start thinking about like, as much as possible, I want my job to be owner stuff. So I want to be like leading leaders, hiring top talent that's leading everyone else and holding them accountable. I want to be managing the finances and the, you know, like the high level functions of this business. I want to be experimenting with new tweaks to the business model and adding new revenue streams. And what an acquirer really wants to see in a residential landscaping company is that like density would be great, you know? So like that really can help your margins, as if, I think that's a common temptation, is especially once you get kind of the reputation that you enjoy and you're good at social media and you're good at putting your name out there and getting reviews, is you'll start getting calls in from far flung places, and like just staying disciplined to building route density. Yeah. Like really try to infill and think of yourself, like there's a logistics side of, especially of maintenance landscaping, of just the more dense and dominant in a geographic area you can be, the better. And that's going to drive up your margin. And then training your team to, you know, knock on the neighbor's doors to upsell the current customer. So I think if you get more dense and you get good at getting more money per existing customer. And so I like the thought of fertilizing. I like the thought of Christmas lights. I like the thought of having a standard sales process that's no pressure. It just feels like good customer service if you're the customer. So they love the work that you do. You're reliable. You show up. You knock it out of the park every time. But then at certain points of the year, your personnel is trained to say, oh, and by the way, Mrs. Jones, we just want to let you know we do Christmas lights and yours would, but you've already like figured out what it would be and you've got it like they're as frictionless as possible to just show her that. And then you can just tap a few buttons on the iPad to add that to your agreement or whatever. And then they just come on that dense route and get that done. And the same thing with fertilization. And it just feels like if I'm the customer, because like I get landscape service too. My landscaper didn't offer me fertilizer. You know, like they just quoted me on all this other stuff, like only what I asked for. And now I'm sitting here thinking, man, I don't even know when to fertilize. I should know this because like my family doesn't. But is it now? Do I need to go to Home Depot and do that? But I feel like if they had knocked on my door and be like, hey, Clint, we're already here. I got some fertilizer. You want me to do that? It's just X dollars. And I think you could go for it. Have you done it yet? I'd be like, no, I haven't done it. I've been thinking about it. I don't. And if it sounds reasonable, yeah, I'd say yes to that. So make my life as a customer as easy as possible. Just always do what you say reliably. And then just offer dangle carrots in front of me for these other high margin things, and then just systematically show that you know how to do that. And then I would probably give spiffs to your crew if they're able to close on those, like, because those are, that's recurring revenue. That's going to probably, if they said yes to Christmas lights 1 year, they're probably going to do it for 10 years. You know, they're probably going to do it many times over. So I would be pretty generous with your spiffs or your like for your team for closing those upsells and just get them, you know, the one time thank you for going out of their way to increase the value to that customer or to grab a new customer from a neighbor, et cetera. And I think when you dial that in where you've got this like dense, like high value. So you're dug in. If I see you're doing not just the mow, blow and go, you know, thing that people would tend to leave for if someone else could do it $10 cheaper, like, but no, you're not only doing that, but you're replacing their flowers in their flower bed on a schedule every year, and you're fertilizing, and you're doing their Christmas lights. And so then I'm thinking the next person that goes and knocks on their door that says, hey, how much are you paying for mowing? I'll do it for $10 cheaper. They're going to be way less likely to switch.
Yeah.
And so you're getting your hooks in deeper. You're making more money. And the customers actually love you more because you're providing so much value into their lives and feel like a partner in their making their life easier and their property more beautiful and enjoyable. And so I think if you do that and end up with like a bigger company, better margins, really sticky, loyal customers, well-trained staff, and then you've got a pipeline of talent. So, you know, as you hit a certain point, I need another teammate for this or that. You've got a reliable way to get more talent because every acquirer is always worried about that. And these blue collar businesses is like, yeah, Nolan's great, but how am I going to get more people and grow this thing? Well, you have a solution. So know how do you get more talent? And then as much as possible, have customer acquisition costs dialed in on like, if, you know, your overseas person that's selling or whatever, if you want to like grow and invade a new neighborhood, like you have a proven way that you do that. And so you can show, yeah, we have a playbook for that, Mr. Buyer. Like we do this, this, and this, and then we know we're going to get at least 100 new customers when we do that. The more that you show that you've got this business model worked out and it's not just magic, like a lot of business owners take great pride in saying like, oh yeah, we don't do any advertising. It's just, we always stay busy and we get, it's great word of mouth. And they're really proud of it because, you know, they're, it's good on their budget to say like, we don't spend money. We always stay busy. But an acquirer looks at that with skepticism because they're like, well, how am I supposed to grow? Am I just supposed to cross my fingers that magic continues? Or do you have like a real lever to pull? So show me those levers to pull. And build a business that looks like that. And that's how you're going to go from instead of that three multiple, that four, that five, that six, that seven. You know, like the more you can make it look like the multiple is really just a conversation around how much do I believe that this earnings power will continue into the future. It's a function of risk, and make this as least risky as possible on the talent acquisition front, on the customer acquisition front, on the low customer turnover, on the high reviews. And that's going to make a buyer feel more comfortable paying those higher multiples. So I think, like, I just wanted to monologue there for a minute. Like, what does a really valuable company look like besides just, yeah, EBITDA big is good. That's always the first like thing, but you can affect the qualitative aspects of this more than you probably give yourself credit for in the eyes of an acquirer, and make people comfortable paying several more turns potentially for your business. So, but you're on the right track, man. And I think I really respect what you're doing, and like hiring an implementer was a big deal, you know, like putting light on all the cockroaches and like getting in there and getting after it. Like that's the kind of stuff you need to be doing. So you're definitely on the right track, brother. I'm really proud of what you're building there.
Yeah. It's hard. It's really hard, but it's good. And I'm glad that I get the chance to do it. And we did, we got the team together in the last 2 weeks and talked about where we've been, where are we, where we're going type stuff. And the part that got me was the 80 families. Like, that's the thing that's crazy to me. And that's what's heavy. That's both exciting and heavy. That's the part that I feel stressed about. I'm not one that like loses sleep very easily. I just believe and move on, and I sleep well generally, unless there's been too many margaritas, but that's worth it. But what I have lost some sleep over recently is just, I got to figure out this business model, because I have a responsibility to build some security and a margin for these 80 families. I'd like to make more money too. That's cool. That'd be really cool. I need that. But the real thing is, I've got 80 people who take money home every Friday that puts food on the table. I've got to figure that out. So we'll see. I think we can, God willing.
You're on your way. The fact you're paying attention to it, measuring it, you know, taking action on it, and implementing the US, I have no doubt that you'll continue to grow and improve your gross profit margin.
Well, have a little doubt so that when I do it, you're impressed. Because right now, if I just do it, you're going to be like, yeah, I do.
I bet you can't do it. I bet you can't do it.
Come on. That's what I need.
I bet you breakfast tacos in Austin in 6 months that your gross profit doesn't improve. How about that?
Game on.
All right. That's a bet. Yeah. I think we're at a good place to wrap. Nolan, congratulations. We're excited to see you hit 8 million and keep growing. And it's been awesome having you on the show and having you open up. And I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Guys, when you get famous and are just influencing all of the business buying world, don't forget me. You know, down here, a little lonely landscaping guy. So thank you for thinking of me. It's fun. It's really fun to hang out with you guys for a bit here. And appreciate what y'all are doing.
Cheers. See you, Nolan.